The good folks at DuckMedic bringing you Lincoln Live today. Improve your air, improve your life, DuckMedic. Chris Goforth in the studio to talk about all things history from the month of January. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year. How are you?
Doing well.
Great.
I'm stuck on about the first week of January. This month, back in history, was huge.
There was a lot that happened during this month. And yeah, the first week was no exception. I think it took up like the first half of the page as we got going. But it started off the University of Nebraska, because we got to talk football, especially with this week with the national championship game and Alabama in it. Well, guess what? The Cornhuskers defeated Alabama 38-6 on January 1st of 1972.
An historic day.
Won back-to-back national championships. So you got to start with that. You got to get that out there. All right? You got to get that Husker pride going. So that's what we started. But also, it was on January 1st of 1863 that you have the very first homestead claim in Nebraska. Daniel Freeman, he was a Civil War soldier, and he was home on leave in Brownville. He filed the first homestead claim minutes after the law went into effect at midnight. And the new law gave government land to citizens, and so he claimed that just near Beatrice. And you can go and visit the Homestead National Monument when it opens again with the,
when the government shutdown. Yeah. Opens up again.
But when they open up again, you can visit that site.
January 4th, the birth of Arbor Day.
Birth of Arbor Day, of course. J. Sterling Morton was the father of that, was a huge arborist, was very, very prolific in the world of agriculture, trying to bring trees back into Nebraska. And back then, what they did was they had a resolution that designated April 10th as Arbor Day, and they offered a prize to the person who planted the most trees. They don't do that anymore, but back then, to just encourage, you know, plant these trees, get this going, they would offer a prize for that.
Do you know what the prize was?
I don't know.
I wondered about that.
Another tree? I don't know. I tried to look through and see what it was, but I couldn't find any records of it.
We have the legislature, the 106th legislature, first session, a 90-day session, starting tomorrow in Nebraska, and it was January 5th, 1937, that the unicameral met for the very first time.
Yep, that was the birth of the unicameral. U.S. Senator George Norris from McCook, huge proponent. He's considered kind of the father of the unicameral. In fact, at the Nebraska History Museum, we have the gavel that he used to ring in the very first unicameral session on display. So if you'd like to come see that, it's on the second floor. You come and check it out. But that was a very pivotal moment in politics for Nebraska.
The Civil War started April 12th, 1861, but 3 months before that, Nebraska's territorial legislature passes a law abolishing slavery and involuntary servitude, and the governor vetoed it.
Yeah.
3 months before the Civil War started.
Didn't expect anything like that to happen. But it was, yeah, it just goes to show, I think, that Nebraska wasn't isolated from these national stories that happened back then. You always hear about the Civil War and everything happening on the East Coast. It was all the East Coast. But this just kind of goes to show that this was something that happened across the country, even into the territories and into our area as well. And we were passing laws and trying to pass laws to move forward.
But the legislature overrode the veto.
They overrode the veto, yeah. So it did go into effect.
Nebraska abolished slavery in January of 1861.
Yes.
Let's jump to January 9th. A big deal in Native American history.
Yes.
And as it plays into the relationship between settlers and natives.
You know, we always say that not all history is good history.
No.
And this is an example of kind of a dark spot in U.S. history and in Nebraska history as well. So January 9th of 1879, Dull Knife, who was a member of the Northern Cheyenne Indians, at the time they were at Fort Robinson, and they broke out of their prison barracks to try to flee to their native land. And to give you a little bit of backstory, this story started in May of 1877. The Northern Cheyenne were forced from their land in Wyoming and Montana, and they were moved into what was called Indian Territory in Oklahoma. The conditions were horrible. I mean, deaths were occurring frequently, if not daily. So Dull Knife, with other tribal leaders, they decided, you know, rather than die here just sitting around, they're going to attempt to flee and return to their homeland. So in September of 1878, they did just that. October 25th, Dull Knife and his camp were taken to Fort Robinson. They were captured, and they remained there until January. And that's when, on January 9th, they decided, we got to get out of here. We have to leave, because they found out that the government said, you're going back to Oklahoma. Send them back to Oklahoma. So they were like, we got to go. So they tried to flee in the middle of the night. They broke out of the Fort Robinson prison. About 64 Cheyenne were killed in that incident. 23 were wounded, and about 78 others were captured. All in all, only about 10 managed to escape. And it wasn't until 1901 that the U.S. Supreme Court called that event one of the most melancholy of Native American tragedies.
You're right. Just, not all history is pretty.
No, it's not. And it's important to look back at those moments because, you know, we always say history has the good moments so we can find our successes, build upon those. But we also look back at our failures and figure out what did we do wrong so we never do it again.
Yeah. And the natives haven't forgotten about it.
Oh, no, absolutely not. It's still fresh.
January 12th, 1888, the blizzard that swept across the plains. This was a beast.
This was one of those moments where you always say, you don't like Nebraska weather, wait 5 minutes. This is one of those moments, and unfortunately, it had deadly consequences. So the day started out much like what we've been having right now, very mild weather. On this date, the temperatures were in the lower 30s by 6 a.m., so people were kind of anticipating a very mild day. There were workers out in the fields that were working without their coats, had short sleeve shirts on. Kids went to school not in their full winter regalia because it was pretty warm. I mean, how many people were outdoors this past weekend? It was kind of, think of that. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of day it was.
A lot of people.
But then as the day was going along, there was this massive cold front that was pushing through the area. And what happened was you had this nice, warm, mild air. This cold front blasts through, and all of a sudden, you have an instant blizzard. And I mean instant. It went from temperatures being very mild in the morning to about noon. Things began to change. By mid-afternoon, it was below zero.
There's no warning.
There was no warning.
1888.
No.
No National Weather Service.
You just kind of went with it. You had no idea what there was no morning forecast. You didn't read the paper and go, oh, the next 3 days are going to be this. They had no idea. And so the storm itself was horrific. There are extreme northwest winds. You're talking about snow, 50, 60 mile an hour plus winds. But the timing could not have been worse because it went through the state right about the time school was going to let out. And this is why the blizzard of 1888 is also called the children's blizzard and also the schoolhouse blizzard, because of the 100 or so people that died just in Nebraska, there was over 200 across the Midwest that died from this. I would say from the math that I did, 85 to 90% of those deaths were children.
Because trying to come home from
school.
They
were trying to go home from school. One of the stories that we have that is very harrowing, it's one that's even depicted in the Capitol building in the Great Hall, is the story of 19-year-old Minnie Freeman out near Ord. She was in the school, like many other teachers, with her students. The storm came in, and they thought, okay, we're going to wait it out. Let's just wait this out. When the storm passes, the parents can come. Because everyone had to walk back then. You didn't have cars. You didn't have buggies. Not everyone had horses. That wasn't that you walked everywhere. And so they decided to wait it out. The winds became so bad, it started to rip the roof off the house or off the school. So Minnie Freeman, this 19-year-old teacher, decided we're going to go to my farmhouse where I'm staying. It's a half mile away. So she tied her 13 students together with twine, went into the winds, walking a half mile into the wind. Her record, she says, visibility was less than 5 feet. Just imagine that, if you will, just trying to walk into this wind, 5 feet visibility, trying to bring 13 students with you at 19 years old. They made it. Thankfully, this is one of the positive stories that came from that. But we have records of other stories that were not as pleasant of an ending, where children died, where teachers didn't make it. But it was a scary moment in Nebraska history and across the Midwest as well. But thankfully now we have technology. But yeah, wait 5 minutes, the weather will change. Came true that day.
Wasn't the only storm. Fast forward, 1949, January 28th, the Operation Snowbound order went out, the 5th U.S. Army.
Yeah, so this actually was in response to not just one storm, but a multitude of storms in 1948 and 49. They started back in November. They didn't end till March. And some places in the state had up to 9 feet of snow when it was all said and done. It didn't melt off until June. Like Knox County was a place, in Alliance was the same way, 30-foot snowdrifts. So what happened was, with all of this snow, trains couldn't move. Everything was locked down in the state. So Operation Snowbound came through. They used vehicles that were called weasels. Think Jeeps with tank tread.
Tracks.
Yeah, with tracks on them. They used those to transport food, equipment, hay, other needs that Nebraskans needed that were snowed in because they couldn't get anywhere. Operation Snowbound, across the area, covered 193 square miles over four states. It saved over 4 million cattle from starvation. It freed nearly a quarter of a million people, with approximately 150,000 of them in the sandhills of Nebraska. And it cleared about 115,000 miles of road. thank goodness for the Army.
Wow. That was in 1949.
49.
There was just so much packed into January.
I know.
Nebraskan Lincoln born. Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney was
born in January.
January 30th, 1941.
Yeah. Movie, I want to go see Vice.
Yep. It's out right now. Yeah. Yep.
Christian Bale picking up a Golden Globe, I think.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. And Starkweather in the month of January. January 30th.
January 30th, 1958. He was captured the day before by Wyoming lawmen. He waived extradition, and on January 30th, he began his return to Nebraska to face the murder crimes that he was being charged with.
Can we just jump around? We talked about some pretty heavy stuff. We talked about 100 people dying. We talked about school children. We talked about some heavy stuff. Paul Revere and the Raiders. I'd forgotten he was born in Nebraska.
He was born in Harvard, Nebraska.
We're not talking about the historian, the Paul Revere.
No, no, the Redcoats are coming. Not that guy. No, Paul Revere from Paul Revere and the Raiders from the 60s
Kicks.
And 70s.
The song Kicks?
Kicks, yeah.
It was Paul Revere and the Raiders.
What was
Love the Ponytail.
I can remember
on... The Dick Clark Show.
Yep. And he was the keyboard player, in case you go back and watch any of the videos.
He wasn't
the singer.
Lindsay.
No.
Mark Lindsay.
Mark Lindsay, yeah. He was the lead singer. But yeah, Paul Revere from Paul Revere and the Raiders. A proud Nebraskan.
Born in Harvard.
Yeah.
Just outside of Hastings.
Yep.
Hastings in the news for its downtown designation. I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, we're really excited to announce last week that the Hastings Historic Downtown District is now listed in the National Register of Historic Places. It's one of the largest districts in the state. There's over 106 or 109 buildings, somewhere around there, that are encompassed within this district. And it really, if you go down to Hastings and see these buildings, it really starts in the late 1800s and the 1880s, when the buildings started to be built around that time, all the way to the mid-50s, 50 years ago, because that's kind of the window for National Register. It has to be at least 50 years in the past. So that's where we had to do the cutoff. But it really gives you a sense of the architecture of the time. And what this really does for those businesses is, if there's any renovation projects they want to do, and they want to, we encourage people to continue that historic character of the buildings, that they can now apply for the State Historic Tax Credit Program and get up to $1 million in tax credits towards their renovations. And they can also apply for the Federal Historic Tax Credit Program as well to help offset some of the costs too. So
not unusual to have individual buildings in a downtown designated.
Oh, yeah. There are a couple in this district that are also listed as well.
But to have
already
an entire downtown, to me, was an amazing accomplishment.
Last year, off the top of my head, I know Kearney and Grand Island were added. Hastings is, again, one of the largest. And most of the time, this is done by the communities. We want community involvement because there's more buy-in. It means something to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we prefer to be told what they feel is historic, then we can do the research and help them out and everything. This was one of those where we kind of took the reins ourselves, like, this has got to get done. This is just too good. This is too prime. And so this is one of the few cases where our History Nebraska staff really was the driving effort to get this done. But 99% of the time, it's us working with community leaders and folks that own the buildings or are in the district to put these together, and we can pass them along with the National Park Service to get them listed.
Good move.
Yeah, I think so.
Good move on Nebraska history's part. Thank you much. We'll look into February here in a month.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right, Chris Goforth from History Nebraska. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And thanks to Duct Medic. Improve your air. Improve your life. Duct Medic. I'm Dale Johnson.